Chapter 37. Ariane stared glumly out of the carriage window as it rolled through the streets of Belshire in the late morning. The clouds veiled the sun in fitful bursts, a brisk wind roaring through the trees, bending them in obeisance to its power. The men and women walking the streets clung to hats and bonnets to keep the thieving gusts from snatching their headwear and tossing it to the skies. Ariane wished to be a bird, to spread her wings and let the wind carry her effortlessly to the solitude and freedom of the Icefire Mountains looming in the east. If nothing else, she desperately wanted to turn north and go back toward her beloved Hightower to enjoy its green hills and pleasant flowers once more. Like a soldier going off to war, she longed for one last embrace from what she held dear, before it was ripped from her, possibly forever. A deep foreboding settled into her bones, tightening her chest and constricting her breathing. That two clerks, long faithful to the family, could perpetrate this slander upon her defied her best reasoning. But their duplicitous behaviour could only mean one thing. Whatever scheme her late husband had embroiled himself in was of a serious and criminal nature. The crushing sensation in her chest continued to build the closer she came to her destination, and she forced the constricting thoughts out of her head and pulled in a lungful of air. Just as Emile Ironhorn had cried and sobbed and frothed on the way to Frostbourne, she had done much the same on the rushed journey back. Misa consoled her, as did Oriana, who had flatly refused to serve her mistress any more. Ariane loved them both dearly for their kindness and for their hopeful confidence that everything would turn out well. And she had to hope. The Queen was her personal friend, the accusing clerks of low rank, her name in good standing. And if it came to the worst, Oriana assured her that one Davon Carver would battle the entire contingent of the sheriff's best men to bring her out of imprisonment. This thought brought a smile and a longing. She fingered the rose pendant on her neck absent-mindedly. How she wished he were here. His earnest and passionate care for her in every trial she had recently faced warmed her, and she wished for a return of those wild and alive feelings that had so pleasantly plagued her before she left for Frostbourne. No garden grew in her heart now, and in her mind's eye she was travelling into a cave, the light of the opening slowly fading behind her the deeper she went. Ariane leaned back and pulled the shade over the window, a sudden shame upon her. How many people knew of the charges against her? What rumours ran rampant through the streets and in the assemblies of her peers? She shuddered to think of what lies and rumours greased the tongues of the idle nobility. Her tears threatened to break forth again, and she shut them down. Missa reached out and grabbed her hand.
Nearly there, milady. The sooner we arrive, the sooner it will be over.
And maybe Lord Carver will be there, Oriana speculated.
Ariane nodded. The carriage slowed and she lifted the shade once more, hoping for some distraction in the view. As they neared the palace, it was quite clear that something was amiss. Armed men marched everywhere, an entire regiment mustering just outside the gates. The Queen's army was on the move. Ariane wondered what could have happened to necessitate such protections. After some trouble at the gates over proper authorization, they rumbled inside past more soldiers, rifles leaning against their shoulders and pointing high into the gusty air. As the carriage turned into the roundabout, she spotted a party waiting for her on the steps. No Davon, no Queen. Just the Lord High Sheriff, two of his soldiers, and a man with white hair and a long, wrinkled face. Her heart sank again, and she fought against the despair. At least she wasn't headed to the dungeon or to the sheriff's prison in town. That was some cause for cheer, though she didn't feel it. The driver pulled at the reins, and the carriage stopped. One of the soldiers stepped forward and pulled open the door. Ariane closed her eyes, breathed in, and let the soldier help her step out. Her lady's maid and Oriana debarked after her while she walked toward the stairs and the men that waited for her there. The Lord High Sheriff, dressed formally in his black uniform of office, bowed.
Lady Hightower, it is good to see you.
Thank you, Lord High Sheriff, she answered, trying to read his face and finding it difficult to tell what the man thought.
And this, he said, indicating the grey-haired man, is Delmont Redd. He is your lawyer.
He bowed to her.
It is an honour to represent you, Lady Hightower. I don't wish to alarm you, but we must begin work immediately.
They ascended the stairs. Ariane's face troubled.
Why so soon? Your trial begins in 2 days, Mr. Redd said gravely. It is a matter of national urgency. I do not wish for you to despair, but we are at war. I suggest we say nothing more of the matter until we are alone. We will have your maids put in the servants' quarters for now, but we cannot delay.
Ariane felt like someone had drained the blood from her body. War? National urgency? Where was the Queen, her friend and confidant? The Lord High Sheriff opened the palace door for her, eyes meeting hers.
I will tell the Queen you have arrived. Do not fret, Lady Hightower.
The reassuring words did not match the gravity of his face, and Ariane clenched her hands to keep them from shaking. Being inside the familiar environs of the palace calmed her. Mr. Red and the two soldiers accompanied her upstairs and into an office that bore her lawyer's name. They passed inside and Mr. Red dismissed the two soldiers, indicating they should close the door and stand guard outside. Once they were alone, Mr. Red took a seat in a leather chair behind the desk, inviting her to take one of the three that sat on the opposite side. Shelves of books and parchment lined the walls, a stack towering on one side of his desk. The troubled sky passed by on the other side of a single, long window stretching up the wall behind her lawyer. He pulled a pair of round spectacles over his eyes and began searching among the documents.
Now, he began, Lady Hightower, I imagine you have a lot of questions. Time requires that I be blunt. We are preparing for war with Cretus, and the act that precipitated the conflict is someone, I'm afraid, beloved by you.
Davin?
She asked, heart skipping a beat. Mr. Red's bushy white brows dipped.
Lord Carver? Heavens, no. I meant the one who had been courting you, the Earl of Longford.
Eutychus Longford? She asked, surprised.
How had he started a war?
The very one. He assassinated the Cretesian ambassador in open court.
Ariane's mouth fell open.
That's impossible. The Earl is hardly a man of politics or passion. This is a mistake, surely.
Is the evidence conclusive?
What did he say?
He held up his hand.
I wish I could bring you better tidings, Lady Hightower, but the fact is that after he committed the murder, he marched into the main hall and boasted of the act.
Something was very wrong here.
Why? Why did he do it?
That we will never know. I am sorry, Lady Hightower, but the ambassador's attaché, Melchor Raines, took immediate vengeance upon the young Eutychus Longford for his crime. I don't wish to be indelicate, but he stabbed him through the heart right there, in the main hall.
Ariane paled. Eutychus dead. Why would he shoot the ambassador? It seemed too ludicrous to be true. The soldiers outside the palace made sense now. An assassination of an ambassador by an earl would mean war. Had the Queen known this was coming? She hardly knew what to say.
It is awful, Mr. Red. Awful and absurd.
Tears brimmed in her eyes. The world was simply falling to pieces.
Gather your strength, Lady Hightower, Mr. Red cautioned. You will have more ill news to face today, I fear. It is related, I believe, to this latest turn of events.
She wiped her eyes and exhaled.
Say on, Mr. Red.
He leaned back and steepled his fingers.
As you know, your estate was paying out a sum of money to an unknown source, and you claim to have had no knowledge of these transactions.
I had no knowledge.
Yes, he replied, leaning forward. I have been informed that this would be your stand. Now listen for a moment, if you please. The Lord High Sheriff has investigated this matter quite thoroughly. Your clerks claim that you had full knowledge of the disbursement of these funds, and they are prepared to testify in court that you threatened their very lives if they went public with the information.
The scoundrels!
Her fury rose. It felt better than the deadening despair.
I was the one whose door was knocked down. A man came to my house and tried to recover those ledgers before they could come to light.
Mr. Red nodded. Yes, we will try to use that to your advantage in court. But after rounding up various employees of the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company and connecting the shipments and people together, what has emerged is that the funds from the Aid Society scandal, along with the funds from your estate and others, were used to purchase weapons and supplies. All the permits were faked, but we know many of the weapons were taken north.
To what end, Mr. Red? She asked.
There are two possibilities, both equally traitorous. One is to provide the Cretesians with arms, which would be useful to them in the coming war, though the weapons' northerly trek would seem evidence against that theory. The second is to help start a northern rebellion against the crown. You and a number of other northern nobles have been implicated by a Mr. Page, the handler of these funds. The Longfords themselves have been implicated, though there is no clear evidence to prove it as yet. While work is ongoing, the only conclusive evidence of contributing funds comes from your estate.
We're trying to recover other ledgers, but we fear some of the nobles have gotten wind of your arrest and are burning their books as we speak.
A numbness settled on Ariane, and she found Mr. Red observing her closely above his fingers. She folded her hands in her lap and tried to compose herself.
I swear, Mr. Red, that I knew nothing of this. This was my husband's affair.
So you claim, he said, and I can believe you, but I fear no one else will. The amount missing from your estate was enough that most would expect you would notice. With the testimony of the clerks, and with one particularly damning letter uncovered by the Lord High Sheriff's men at Justice Page's place of business, I am afraid the case has swung against you, Lady Hightower.
What letter?
Mr. Red shuffled through the papers and handed her one.
This is but a copy of the text, you understand. The original will be presented at trial. The letter uses code names, but our experts have identified the handwriting on the original as your husband's, and it is dated a year before his death, at the hand of Lord Carver.
He handed her the paper, and she took it tentatively, almost afraid to read its contents.
Mr. Bird, I have been informed of the scheme in full, its risks and its rewards. I'm pleased to say that my wife and I are in complete agreement with the goals of this endeavour, and we are happy to contribute a sizable sum to its prosecution and success. I'm aware that it will take some time to put in place, but I will be patient and await my return. I have authorised my clerks to debit my estate the sum of £150 a month to be paid to the man you indicated during our last conversation. Regards, Mr. Elm.
Ariane wanted to crumple the paper, stomp on it, and then throw it in the fire.
Lord Caunton and his stupidity. And then to imply that she had any part of it without her knowledge. She had half a mind to return to Hightower, exhume his grave, and have Davin Carver shoot him again.
She slammed the paper down on the desk, startling Mr. Red.
I assure you with all the sincerity of my heart that I knew nothing of this scheme and had not entered into any sort of agreement with my husband or anyone else.
He exhaled. I understand, but I need you to consider something very carefully, Lady Hightower. As it stands now, I cannot win this case for you. If you fight the charges, you will lose, and you will be sent to the drowning bridge the next day.
Her blood ran chill.
What are you suggesting? I am suggesting that you admit you knew about the debits to your account, but that your husband had not informed you that it was for weapons or any scheme. That is much more plausible, and will either win you your freedom or simply a removal of your rank. There are no witnesses that saw you threaten your clerks with assassination, nor any assassins who have come forward claiming your hire. So you suggest I lie?
She asked, surprised. Mr. Red regarded her with a serious face.
To save yourself from an unjust death, yes, Lady Hightower, I do. Your life is worth the lie.
It had all come too quickly. She stood. The office offered little space for pacing, but she did it anyway. So to survive the treachery of her husband and her clerks, she would have to act the stupid girl and tell a court she knew what she didn't know and that her husband had hidden the truth from her. At least one part was true. But still, it hurt to do it. Dissembling to give satisfaction to her accusers rankled her.
What would Davin do, besides shoot them through the heart? What would he counsel me to do?
She walked a little more, turning back and forth, while Mr. Red sat lost in thought.
And where is Davin when I really need him?
Lady Hightower, Mr. Red said at last, I know this has all come rather suddenly. Take some time to think on it. I know you have your principles, and I do not wish you to go against your conscience. My office and my charge from the Queen is to see you safe, to keep you alive.
I understand, she said. I would like some time.
He rose.
Very well. I will meet with you first thing in the morning. The Queen asked me to send you to her directly after our meeting. The two guards will escort you to her.
Ariane sat in the drawing room, heart heavy for her friend, the Queen. While Philippa was old, her lively spirit had always defied her dying frame. The spirit, however, had sunk to the level of the body, though the monarch's eyes still radiated intelligence and fire. The arrow-asp walking stick supported her, its steadying presence apparently a need now, despite the fully healed ankle. They embraced, and Philippa's wan smile pushed Ariane's own troubles out of her mind for a moment. In all the mental scrapping for her own life and reputation, she had neglected to think of what her elderly friend faced. A nation at war and a dark, divisive conspiracy. Philippa sat down hard on the couch.
Well, my dear Ariane, we are in the thick of a mess now.
I am glad you arrived safely, though I wish you would have followed Davin's example and perhaps faked your own death. If you aren't careful, there won't be any fakery to it.
Ariane didn't want to face that yet. She would save those ruminations for what promised to be a long, sleepless night.
Where is Lord Carver, Philippa?
The Queen sighed.
The honest truth is that I do not know. I sent him on a mission to search out the person through whom all these illicit payments were funneled. This he did along with some other men I keep in my personal dungeon. The scoundrel they captured is Justice Page, and after apprehending him, Davin and his companions were hunted and fled into the Royal Wood. Then it gets a little strange, I'm afraid. The Aoa Catan captured them. One of my men and Justice Page they released. The two barely made it to Belshire in one piece. Davin, however, the Aoa Catan retained in their custody and dragged off to the flame knows where.
Ariane knew little of the North people, save that they were barbaric and that the Cretesians killed them on sight.
What would they want with him? To hear my man tell it, they say they were fascinated by the scars on his chest. They are a superstitious lot. Do you know of these scars?
I saw them on his chest when he was in the infirmary, Ariane said. From a saber cat, I understand. The Queen shook her head.
Well, I'm quite cross that they carried him off. I really need that man around just now.
As do I. A smile finally crept to Philippa's lips, and she relaxed, leaning back into the couch.
And how did you find Frostborn?
There is a lot to tell, Philippa, Ariane said, wringing her hands, and none of it good. But I have a matter of some delicacy to bring to you immediately, if you'll excuse me a moment. Ariane reached into her dress and pulled out the letter she had confiscated from the study. I have this letter from Davin's father where he disinherits his son, claiming that he is a bastard and has no right to Frostborn. It is extraordinary. I almost burned it, but I wanted you to see it first. Do you know about any of this?
Philippa rose slowly, brows knitted, the arrow asp walking stick taking most of her weight.
I do.
Is it true?
The old queen shuffled forward.
Let me see the letter, dear.
Ariane handed it over and the queen read it, walking in a slow circuit around the room.
Insufferable man, that Asper Carver, she finally said.
Then she tossed the document into the fire. Ariane's eyebrows shot up.
So it is a lie, then?
Philippa turned and shook her head. The fire brightened briefly as the paper ignited, the harsh light deepening the wrinkles on the queen's aged face.
No, it isn't. Davin is not the son of Asper Carver.
Does anyone know who his real father is? The queen nodded slowly.
Yes. At least I do. I believe I am the only one besides Davin's mother that knew for sure. Remember when we talked some months ago about how, when Davin's parents died, I kept a close eye on Frostborn? You may have thought I did so out of concern for the young Davin, but it was quite the opposite. I did so because I wanted him to be miserable, to fail, and bring ruin on the Carver name and his estate.
Ariane straightened.
What? Why? Because I was an angry, hurt woman, Ariane.
A silent horror started to build within her, a realization of what the Queen was implying. It simply couldn't be true. Ariane's mouth fished for words before some finally came out.
But you're not suggesting that he is the son of the late King Ostris.
The Queen's eyes were lost in a memory.
It is so, Ariane. But you always said that your marriage was a happy one, that you loved each other.
Philippa grunted.
Also true. But it was not without its mistakes and wretchedness, too. Davin's mother was a beauty, tall and slender, and as fair as Emil Ironhorn. Asper Carver was also of fair colouring. Imagine the marital distress when Davin was born with his tan skin and dark hair, the same colouring as his father, often called King Ostris the Brown.
But how did you know? Ariane asked. Philippa meandered back to the couch and took her seat.
Ostris confessed it to me the day after the affair. He was miserable about it and had hoped that nothing would come of it. We were both older then. I was already shriveling while he was as powerful and virile as ever he was. Anyway, when the news broke that she was with child, we watched carefully. When the child was darkly complexioned, we knew the truth. To her credit, Davin's mother never confessed, but Asper Carver knew the child was not his. and no one should ever know, Ariane. I wonder, has he read this letter?
I cannot say.
Ariane explained the alarming circumstance of its discovery and the room with Asper Carver's corpse. The Queen's face blanched.
This is indeed a setback. If word ever got out, he would never be thought sane again.
It won't. Frostborn Manor is no more.
Say again?
The Queen asked, eyes sharp. Emil Ironhorn accidentally let her bedding wander into the fire just as we made to leave. The whole place is ashes.
Colour returned to Philippa's face, her frown threatening to break the confines of her face. For the moment, the monarch appeared too angry to speak. She rose again, shuffling off toward the window. Out in the palace gardens, the turbulent wind thrashed the trees and bushes under Philippa's sour gaze. Ariane sat back and considered. Davon was the son of a king. His illegitimacy would never let him enjoy the privilege of it, however, and Ariane understood why the information could never come to light. But one question remained.
Philippa, if you hated Davon for what he represented, how did you come to admire him?
It was a great lesson, the Queen said, face still etched with anger.
She sighed and returned to her couch, laying the walking stick on her lap.
I watched for failure and saw nothing but his father, his real father, in him. His tenacity, his courage, his kindness. When Davon Carver first came to court at his majority, my heart nearly broke. King Austrus was dead then. Davon is a fair likeness of him, though his mother's slight frame subtracted from Austrus's mighty one somewhat. I have loved him as my own son since, though from afar. He has needed no favour or protection from me during all these years. I only wish him happiness.
Ariane smiled, her first of the day. As do I.
Good. Then stay alive, dear friend. Would you marry someone like Davon Carver?
If he would ask.
Good, the Queen replied, leaning back into the cushions of the couch. It is my fondest hope that he comes to his senses and drops the knee, whenever the Aoa Katana done with him. He might be stubborn about it because of his loss of rank, but that punishment cannot last much longer.
He is needed,